The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Okay, keep your hymnals handy. We'll refer to those from time to time, at least once. When we talk about elementary music, a number of things come to mind. The first one that comes to my mind is that time. I don't know how it is in your school, but time is so limited. That was our great, I guess I'd call it handicap, in our school, was that we had so little time, it seemed, to squeeze in music and, of course, art, those two courses. And I love music and art. And it's hard for me to see them get pushed to the side. But it happens. It really is so easy to happen. How many of you have music at least twice a week in your classroom? How many have three times a week? How many of you have or are going to be teaching elementary music this week? How many junior high and high school? Okay, a few. All right. Let's just have a little bit of a contributing session here. What kinds of things do you do? I'll tell you what our school did, and then I'd like to hear what your school does for elementary music. Our school basically was simply getting ready for the two programs that we had. The one program, the 1st of December, another program the first part of April, and music was basically preparation for those two things. Once in a while, the teacher would be able to work in a short series on something at the beginning of the year, maybe after Christmas break. But generally, in terms of formal music instruction, we found it hard for two reasons. One was time. The other was that most teachers didn't feel qualified, able, competent to teach any kind of music. Those are two tough handicaps. And I'm guessing that a lot of us fall into that category. Not that we don't want to, it's just we don't feel able and don't really have the time. Now, I'd like to hear what some of you have been doing in your schools. Nobody cared. Let's have a number of you. Linda, can I pick on you? What do you do in your school? You have what? How often do you have music? So you have Rod and staff curriculum and you have music once a week. Do you have school programs at all? A spring program. Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone else? Grace, do you want to say what happened here? How much time did you spend on curriculum? Do you practice more than those 2 half-hour periods as the program is closed? Yeah. Yeah. It's called block work, okay? Anyone else? I'd like to hear from some more of you. Gospel publishers. Is it for elementary through high school or for what grade? Through 8th grade. How many times did you have music in a week? Did you have programs? One. Programs are hard work. Anyone else? Go ahead.
I taught music through high school for the last semester. It was kind of whatever I came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Do a music leader book, which is about 50 people. We had 3 times.
three times a week for second semester.
Right. And then a program.
A program at the end. Okay, anyone else? Anything different? Perhaps that's, we've covered what your school does. Anybody do anything different from what we've heard? So did that course go out and get programs in churches at all? Or?
No.
Mm-hmm. So you had one class a week for basic theory and then one class for singing chorus. Anyone else? Okay. Along with the rudeness class. You work on other things? Okay, yes. Yes. Okay. I appreciate those that input. What I'd like to talk a little bit today is talk about some curriculum options and talk a little about programs and then talk a little about the child's voice. So the quality you want to seek and the way to take care of it. Some things you can do to nurture the sound and that's going to be a nice sound and that takes care of their voice and don't abuse it. Curriculum, some of you mentioned the David C. Cook. That is a very fine curriculum because it does build up from the very basic. Right? It's, you could start on that, in that curriculum, I believe, K-5, you could start teaching music using that curriculum. And it goes up, it's very graded, it's structured very well. I always felt that a teacher should be able to take it, and if they put the time in, they should be able to do it. But most teachers tell me if their interest is not music, and they feel they know very little, they feel overwhelmed by it. But it's, if you know anything about music, and you feel like you want to put the time in, the teacher's book is word for word, you could read it. I wouldn't advise it, but you could read it for the class, and it would be explained. It's very well explained. That's why I feel like a teacher could learn it if they really wanted to. But I know it takes time, and if you have other things pressing, it's tough to try to self-teach that. But it's an excellent course. They do have instruments, but you don't have to use them. You can just use a pitch pipe or something like that. But it's great because it develops the whole... it's not just sight singing. It talks about sight singing, reading the notes. And it talks about music history, sing a lot of songs. It's just a nice program, and I would recommend that you look at it. Another one that wasn't mentioned was written by Irene Moyer. How many of you know Irene Moyer from Lancaster? Yeah. She wrote an elementary curriculum for our Mennonite school, and she's had quite a bit of training in music. I think that's a good little course. Again, some teachers felt that if music wasn't their thing, they didn't feel they could teach it. But it is, if you have any interest in music at all, it's fairly easy to get into because it starts at the very bottom. If you want to learn with the students, you can do that. Just a comment on CLE. That's an individual set up for individualized, is that correct? And it's shaped notes. And I would just say this. I know that some of you, just because of time, you feel like, well, we're going to teach them some shaped notes and we'll get the basics and it's better than nothing. And I would agree with you. If you can find the time, go beyond shaped notes. Just because if you stay with shaped notes, it limits severely the music they can sing. So it's basically the church hymnal, there's a few hymnals that are, and maybe that's what your church prefers. I want to respect that. That's what they want. That's fine. But if they're not limited to that, I would encourage you to branch out and try to go. Because if you have music once or twice a week and you only have one program, you should be able, with a little bit of planning and discipline, and if you work on it a little bit every time, especially over 2 or 3 years' time, you should be able to have those students reading some basic round notes. You could teach yourself. And so it's not very difficult. The key is consistent weekly practice. That's the key. And if you can't do that, you're going to be in trouble. But if you can read the round, if you get them the round notes, that would be excellent. One of the things that David C. Cook curriculum does with the lower elementary is that they take a music staff on the floor in the classroom. Just use masking tape. You got carpet or a hard floor. Doesn't matter. Use masking tape. Tape your clefs down and label those lines and spaces. And young children, anyway, it has to be a physical activity. Get them standing, jumping from one to another and learning what those lines and spaces are, and then take the labels off and still play the game. They love it. It's great fun. You know, make sure you stand on a line or stand in a space. And it's a great way to teach them, you know, what's on a line and what's in a space. Some of us didn't even know that, you know. It's a great way to teach them that concept. So, David Cook is good, and I think Irene Moyer's course is very good as well. If you need that, if you want to find out how to get a hold of that, some of you from her area. If you want to hear from Faith or Faith Mennonite, you could at least hook them up with the right people. Grace, you could hook them up with the right people. I think I might have her phone number too. How's that? That would be here. Yes, that would be here. So if you want to look at that. Okay, any other comments on curriculum? We'll just make it a little more informal and open. Any comments or questions on curriculum? She wants to take it on up. I'm not sure how far she is. Anyone know?
I think she's up to about level 5.
Is she?
I'm not sure how far she's trying to go either, but she's working there.
Yes. Yeah, she's up probably about 5th grade, somewhere in there. So it is elementary. If you haven't had much of a well-planned curriculum up to this point, you may just want to buy the first books that have the first 4 grades, go through that, and then work them all up, you know, different ways you could do that. Okay, programs. I'd like to hear a little bit of what kind of programs you have, too. Now, what's common is a program where each room has a little part of the presentation of the evening, and you usually have a unifying theme, and then you sit down as teachers and decide which room will take what part of the theme and develop it, choose some little poems or readings to go with it, and you present a program. How many of you have just heard your program described? Okay, most of you. Okay, what we did in December, we had that kind of program, and it was usually Christmas was the theme, something to do with Christmas. And then in the spring, we tried to find some kind of children's, I guess you'd call it a musical, however, we didn't necessarily produce it as a musical. Some people would not accept that. That's fine. You need to do what you can do in your school. What we did was take a children's musical and learn those songs, learn the speaking parts, and present that. The only thing about that is I find it's very tough to find a good one. There's a lot of flaky ones out there. And by flaky, I mean they emphasize things like, you know, feel good, you know, I'm special, I don't really enjoy it. I want something that has some punch, that has some meat to it. It's not just flaky entertainment. But some of the salty musicals, how many of you are familiar with salty tapes, the Choa's tapes. Some of his are very good. A couple of his I don't like, but some of his, Heart to Change the World and hymns, some of those are very good. So if you want to look at that, even you can do all kinds of adaptation with those. You don't have to put it on like they set it up there. You can adapt lots of things out of there. Parents love it. Our program attendance really climbed, and we felt it was a good way to do it. We just really had a good success with that. It takes a lot of time to practice. We always resolve to start in January and manage to get started on the middle of February. It's tough, but it's a good way to go at it. In terms of scheduling, there's different things you can do in your school. If you want to suggest something, you say, there's no way I can teach music. And what you could do is find one who can and swap a few classes. Say, hey, I'll teach your art if you teach my music. I'll teach your health if you teach my music. And do some trading around. If you're the only one in your school, you don't want to trade with, you have a problem. Maybe you could find a parent who's gifted in that area, who's willing to come in and do some teaching along those lines. Okay, let's talk a little bit about sound of a child's voice. Before I forget, I better go over this. I'm going to forget it again. Someone reminded me of 2 minutes still. I had forgotten the stack of books. I'll leave these up here so you can browse through them if you want. This one is entitled A Passion for Learning, History of Christian Thought on Education. And what it is excerpts from Scripture, beginning with Scripture, all the way through modern times of people involved in education. It includes people like Emerson and Dewey. It also includes people like Justin Martyr and Augustine and others. Anybody that's written about education. And I think it's important that it would be readable because it has little biographical sketches about these people. And you really do need to know a little bit about what has happened in the history of education. And I think it's put up in a very interesting format. You don't have to read all their, to the Emperor Titus Aelius Adrianus Antoninus Pius Augustus Caesar. You're not going to want to wade through very much of that. But you should. It's good for you. But you don't have to, is what I'm saying. You can browse through and read some of these sketches and historical summaries and really learn a lot. And you begin to see that a lot of things have been going on in education that are pretty old, but they sound like they're new, but they're not. They've been around a long time. And so A Passion for Learning, that's an excellent book. C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. Anybody read this book? Two? It's good reading. I've read most of it. I haven't read all of it. One of those books you have to read a few pages and chew on it for a while. But it's really a defense of Christianity. I don't know how much you know about C.S. Lewis, but C.S. Lewis was an apologist for Christianity to the skeptics, especially the intellectual skeptics. But he writes, he's very readable. Excellence in Teaching with the Seven Laws. Carl Schaefer here took John Milton Gregory's Seven Laws of the Teacher and sort of put them in modern format and then just very, very condensed, very readable, very condensed. And I would highly recommend that. Here's a book put out by ACSI, same company, this one of the gentlemen here, same guy that wrote Classroom Discipline. But Shaping the Next Generation, a look at the lifestyles of Christian school students. I talked about being gospel hard, and this is an excellent book. They took a massive survey of Christian school students and surveyed everything, I have to say everything about them, their lifestyle, their habits, their parents, relationships, how they spent their money. It's an excellent book, especially if you work with very many inner city or non-Christian young people. It would be an excellent book what we found out, we took the survey in our school and reproduced it and gave it to our high school students and compiled it. Very insightful. We're not professional statisticians, so we couldn't do all the work off the survey like they do here, but we were able to draw some pretty astounding conclusions about our own high school students and where they were headed, what kinds of things they were doing, because it was a confidential survey. We also surveyed the parents, just like we did in here. It was a parent survey. And so it was very interesting, and I would recommend this book, especially if you teach in a high school. Where are Christian young people going today? Here's a book, Teach As He Taught, about the teaching methods of Jesus. I haven't read the whole thing, but it's a great resource book. Teach As He Taught. I'll leave these up for you to browse. Back to the Blackboard by Jay Adams. It's a good book. Here's one I've been quoting out of extensively today. Teaching to Change Lives. How many have read this? Only a few. You have to read this book. You shouldn't be teaching if you haven't read this book. Written by Howard Hendricks. And it's really the seven laws of the teacher. He quotes John Milton Gregory. And he's taken the seven laws of the teacher and just revamped them out of his own life and experience. And very readable. It is not academic at all. One of the things that makes him so powerful as a teacher is very, very educated. It speaks on your level. Anybody seen the book, The Healing Presence? Anybody read that? Seen it? By Leanne Payne. How God's Grace Can Work in You to Bring Healing in Your Broken Places. An excellent book. When I read this book, I kept saying, I can't believe it. I've been looking for the answer to some of those things for years, and I couldn't believe it. This is an excellent book, again, to keep on your bed and pick up and read a few pages every night and work your way through it. Think about it. You need to read discerningly, but I find much in here that I think is very solid. Okay. Also, I have a box in the back of these. Now, if you're a school administrator, a principal, or just a teacher, and your school's just starting, and it's a new school, I'd encourage you to look at getting a parent guide or a parent handbook for your school. We just reprinted these. We revised some things and reprinted them. And there's a box in the middle of the table in the back. And just asking for $2 to cover printing costs. If you can't afford that, believe me, just take one. I think, at least I was always looking for resources. If you don't find something you want to do, you'll find something you don't want to do. You know, that's what you find when you look around. And it just gives you ideas. And what we did was sit down and go through this with every parent in your parent interview. And just highlight. We wouldn't go over everything. We'd highlight. We'd ask them to read it and bring it to the interview. And we'd go through things. And it just saved us a multitude of problems. A few things that I think are outstanding in here are the discipline section and the, I think the dress code is a model. If your school is pulling from a number of churches, I think the dress code is could be a good model. The channels of communication in here, I think, are very good. So important. So important in your school to have good channels and to respect the channel. Attendance information. Attendance is tough sometimes to know how to handle those things. I think it has a good attendance policy. So those are some things you could look at to be a resource for you. This school has been in existence for 26 years now. And I always think it's helpful to look at things people have been doing for a long time, especially for starting something. I didn't have a lot to do with this. I'm just saying I think it's a good handbook. Most people were there before I got there. So. Okay, we'll go back to elementary music. That was a little side trip. Meant to do all that this morning, first session. Never got it done. Some people ask the question, how do you get children to sing? And we often have less problem with that because of our traditions in our churches that we sing a lot of a cappella. And we sort of grow up with that. But I find a lot of churches anymore, as more Christian schools come in and we have small schools and there's less people available to teach music, that there's really a gap there. Just because, it's just like anything else, you know, we just don't know. We just haven't had anyone there to help us with it. And so I think that music is important. I think the quality of singing in our churches has just dropped in the last 15 years. Now, there are notable exceptions, but I think we need to be sensitive in our role. You know, I've been amazed. I was only teaching in my school for 5 years, but my first year seniors are now married, having children. Already, they're looking at, in a couple of years, sitting there, I'm like, wait a minute, this was only a couple of years since you were in my high school. And it's so fast that the generation moves. And if you're older, I'm sure you've already thought of that, but it's just sort of been a new concept to me. I've heard it, but I'm beginning to see it. And it's scary. So it's so important, I think, that we emphasize some of these things in our schools. Turn to number 252 in your hymnal. You know, people tell me that I don't know how to sing, I don't know what to get, you know, what kind of sound to get, I don't know how to do it. And I know it takes time and work and all those things, but you can learn. And number one that you need to do is have some good music available for yourself. You need to have good choral music. I'm not saying that's the only music you can listen to, but you need to have some good choral music so that you have a model in your mind, in your ear. If you don't, you know, you'll only, you can't impart what you do not possess. If you have a certain sound that you're used to, that sounds good to you, you're going to be satisfied with that sound in your ear. So if you have low quality music that you're listening to, you're going to be satisfied with low quality sound in your students. And I know we all differ on what is quality. And we could debate long and hard on that. But you do need to have some outstanding music available that you can listen to and make that a part of your ear so that you hear quality. You know, we'd never be satisfied living on McDonald's cheeseburgers all the time. But music, so often we are. We live on cheeseburgers. There is a difference in how much music feeds us. And so we need to be alert to that. 252. One of the things I'd say is just be alert to the melody. Melody is so crucial. And we tend to sing every hymn the same. And so this song, In heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall fear. There's not much there that's going to interest you. That's an old song. And your students will tell you, these hymns, these are boring, you know, these are out of date. I don't like this song. They'll tell you, but you know what? Nobody ever sat down to write a boring hymn, a boring tune. And so what we need to do is find out, what's the melody? What does it want to do? And so I can say, is it fast? In heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall feel, and say, well, might be a little better. Is it bouncy? In heavenly love abiding. That doesn't quite sound right, does it? Does it go with the words? The words can give you some insight there. How about this? In heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall feel. That was a little better. I was just thinking lullaby there. Just trying to sound a little bit like a lullaby. How many know this song? A little bit. Well, let's learn it. Ready? In heavenly love abiding,
Don't change my heart, self-deem, and save this touch confiding, for nothing changes me. The storm may roar without me, my heart may low be laid, but God is round about me, and can I be dismayed?
Now, if I sang that like Honor of Christian Soldiers,
in heavenly love abide.
Anyway, this doesn't quite fit. At least not the text. Now, what's my point? Well, you could take, and if you're going to be sensitive to music, you're going to have to spend some time singing melody, becoming sensitive to melody. And you need some help in that. You're saying, well, how do I know? How does Elvis know that a lullaby would fit there? Well, that's a good question. But it takes time and just involvement. What sounds good here? Does this sound nice? No, not really. How about this? Does this sound nice? Ask yourself, whenever you hear a melody, there's a couple of questions you should ask yourself when you hear a song. Why do I like this? Does it have a nice melody? Is the harmony nice? How are they singing it? Is it happy? Is it sad? Is it joyful? Is it melancholy? Is it smooth? Is it bouncy? Why do I like it? Those kinds of questions will help you begin to develop your ear for a nice sound. Now let's just sing this melody again. There you go.
In heavenly love abide.
Okay, now I want you to imagine that you're singing a lullaby to your little baby, your niece, or nephew, whatever. Here we go.
In heavenly love abide, no change my heart shall fear, and safe is such confining. For nothing changes me. The storm may roar without me, my heart may lonely lay, but God is round about me, and can I be dismayed?
And if you sing it beautifully to your students, they're going to begin. Remember I said earlier, it takes time. But they're going to begin to appreciate. Now, anyone who loves to sing can be a possible teacher. If you love to sing, you can teach children to love to sing. Because if you love it, you're going to impart your love to them. If you love to sing, they're going to love to sing. Now, often what happens is that we think, well, it's not a children's song. How are you going to like to sing if it's not a children's song? Well, this song, if you talk about just the melody, they love it. We had meetings these last 2 weeks. Every night, the evangelist would close the benediction. He would end with, I heard an old, old story, Victory in Jesus. Okay. Well, by the end of 2 weeks, my boys, I mean, they could sing that every night. Before the end of 2 weeks, they were singing it during the day, you know. Now, that's an adult song. Why would a 6-year-old or a 2-year-old? Well, because they somehow picked up that this was, that there was something good about this. And they began to enjoy it. And we can impart the same kind of thing to our students. Now, that's not my favorite song. I'm not real fond of gospel songs. You know, the real bouncy old gospel songs. But, you know, there's some of them that have stuck around a long time. And they're good songs. So, the thing that I want to work at here, just for a few minutes, is how do we sing easily? You know, there's lots of ways that we sing. Why don't you just talk a little bit about the voice. Take, for instance, God is so good. Now, with children, they love to explore. They love to do fun things with it. You can say, how low can you say God is at all? God is so good. You know, they'll try to say, how high can you say, oh, that's streak away, and try to say it real high. And you know, I don't encourage those real croaky or real shrieky sounds, but get them to begin to experiment. Now, one thing that's so important, I think, for children's songs is that you don't pitch the song too high or too low. Find out what's comfortable. It doesn't have to be in the key that it's written. Oh, this is in the key of E flat. We have to sing it. No, you don't have to. They're children. Let them sing it where it's comfortable. So, sing it in a comfortable range. Let them explore with the pitches. And some children, I can't sing that high. But I saw this done one time in a workshop with the children's choir where the director said, I want you to sing like a siren. And so she thought, I'm going to direct in a circle. As I go up, I want your sound to go up. And when I come down, I want it to go down. I mean, she said, remember, follow my circle. She was teaching them to follow her as well. This is a huge choir. She had 80 children up there on a riser. She worked with them all day on a Saturday. There were plenty of breaks. Can you imagine your elementary children working all day on something? They did it, and they had a good time. It can be done. And so she got up there, and of course, making sirens. What second grader doesn't love making siren sounds? Mm-hmm. And so they had a great time. What they discovered is they could go high easily, and they could follow the director. In fact, you and I can do it. Let's do it. Okay? We can make the same siren sound.
We can start here with woo.
Okay, let's try it. Ready? Here we go. Yeah. Okay, you get better. Try to be a second grader. Do it again. Ready? Here we go. Follow my hand. Oh, you had it too quick. See that? I went down there. That's what she would do with it. Oh, that was great fun. It's a game. Oh, we messed up. You know, it's just follow her hand, you know. And so they learn. And now, you made high sounds there. Was it going to hurt? No. It didn't hurt. But you began to be free with making high and low and you were doing some swooping there and began to get used to making these sounds. And so after that, just imagine your elementary class after doing that a couple minutes. I mean, they're all hyped. This is great fun. Now let's sing this song and you connect it to the song. Remember, this starts low and then we go high. And so we connect what we learned by connecting. Instead of the Lord, and we take that, we overemphasize a little bit, and we get them to begin to connect those sounds. There's basically three things that you need to think about. Before I go into that, let's just talk a little more about that vocal exploration. How low can you say it, how high, doing the siren. And, you know, we have different voices for different things. When I say, when that child is nestling up for the night and you're going to read them a story, they're talking quiet and they say, you read me a story, Mom, and I'm tired, you know. And it's quiet. But when they're out playing, you know, it's full blast, full on. And you can tell him, and you can have fun with it. Have him do it. Have him say what it says to your mom and dad at night. Have him, you know, and then they all know what it sounds like at recess. That's no time. You don't want to reproduce that. But then tell them singing is the same way. We have different voices for different things. And we have a voice for singing, and we can do different things with it. And so you can have fun experimenting with them. And they love to experiment. And just be creative with it and have some fun with it and let them experiment. And when you find a child that sounds good, you know, you have those. There's always a couple, it seems, that have that little better talent, realize your sound. It doesn't hurt to pick that child out and say, this is a good sixth grade boy. Now, what you're doing, and then you have maybe a group of them sing, or just have that one sing what you just sang. See, now, can you sound just like that? Especially if you're a male teacher. it might be tough when the parents like when the voice change. You know, you're singing this pitch and you expect them to sing an octave higher. You know, pick out a student. So this is a good third grade voice right here. And have them echo that. And we did that in college. Prof had all the basses stay in a line. Everybody had to vocalize their lines. He said, ask us about which voice was the best sound. So everybody pointed to the guy and had a vote. You know, came to confuse you guys and had a vote. And it had him do it again. And everybody sounded like that. Okay, now, it's simply going on the model that we sing the way we're used to hearing things. If you're used to hearing bluegrass, you're going to sound like bluegrass. Okay? If you're used to hearing the Messiah, you're going to sound more like the Messiah. Now, if you like bluegrass, you say, well, that's fine with me. I like bluegrass. But that's what your choir is going to sound like. Just remember, that's the sound you're going to get. If that's the only model you have. Okay. Let's talk about teaching a piece. So you want to teach this song to them, and you say, okay, everybody listen, and you know, you can have it, and they don't, you know, are you earning the right to be heard? Are you communicating enjoyment of the song? Look for something in the song that jumps out at you as the most teachable element. Now, let's just look at this song. What phrase was repeated most often, musically? Bum, 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 bum. It's repeated what? Three times? It's in there three times. And then you have bum, 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 da, dum, bum. Those two things. And you can have fun with that. You have them do it with nonsense syllables. Bum, 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 bum. Now, if you want a lullaby sound, you know that's what you're going to want. Say, can we do it on la? La, 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 la. You want a little bit of bounce in it? Pum, pum, pum. You know, use nonsense syllables to help communicate the kind of sound you know you're working toward. If you teach it slow and boring and then try it at once, okay, now we know it. Now, let's sing it. You're going to have a tough time. You're going to have a tough time. Now, another thing is you may want to do a rhythm. You know, if you do a little bit of work with rhythm in your music class, pick out a simple part of the song, a simple rhythm, and speak the words in rhythm. In heavenly love abide. Can you say that? In heavenly love abide. Put it together. So it could be a phrase, it could be a rhythm, it could be part of the melody. It could be a solfege pattern. You know, do re mi fa. Everybody say so mi re. Everybody say that. So mi re. Can you tell your class that? They sing it, and they're learning a little bit of solfege syllables, and they're learning the melody of the song. And you're combining the teaching and the learning. It doesn't have to all be rote, you know. Okay, we've got to learn this song. Okay, sing it, you know, and you hit it hard. People get tired. The ideal voice is light and flexible to the ear. Now, just putting it in simple terms, it's light and flexible. I just cringe when I hear elementary choirs singing, and I see the teacher, you know, louder, and they just shriek away. A high note coming up, they're singing loud, they want to do their best, but don't do it. Please, don't do it. I always get criticized for my choirs being quiet. I'd much rather have a softer, more pleasing sound than a loud, harsh, driving sound. We think that volume equals joy of the Lord. Not true. If that were true, we'd have a lot more amens in our churches, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of amens. We don't have a loud... But we think when it comes to singing, volume equals joy. And that's not the case. We have different voices for different things. Vary. Don't sound the same on every song. Ashley, what's the text communicating? What does the music want? What does it sound like? And can I create that sound? Look at In Heavenly Love Abiding. That's pretty high. How many of you albums had a tough time on the high note on that? Yeah, didn't feel real comfortable. Now listen when I sing the phrase before that. For nothing changes here, the storm may roar. Now, that wasn't the nicest sound. It wasn't real comfortable to me, but I just lightened up a little bit. But what if I think I have to sing strong? The storm may roar. I mean, I'm just going to push it out, you know. And if I do it very long, it's going to hurt. You know, I'm going to get sore. Oh, my voice is shot today, you know, you people say. Well, you know, that light, flexible sound is much better because the volume can come. As we back off a little bit with that light, flexible sound, the volume can come later. The volume can come. You can work on that. If you sing with that and just insist on that light, flexible sound with your students, elementary students, I've done it. I was going to mention that I haven't taught ever a full year of just elementary music. So in a sense, it was kind of partly enough for this. In a sense, I'm not qualified to teach. I did teach part-time elementary a year or two, and I've always helped out with the elementary in the spring program, rehearsal with a singing class. But I've been amazed. They can do this. They can, and they'll work with you, and they can hear the difference to the ninth sound. You say, you know, you'll stop and say, wait a minute. You all sang, the tornado, you know, you exaggerate a little bit, and that's how they sing. They say, is that nice? Oh, no, no, no. And they say, well, can we make it nice? Oh, yeah, we'll make it nice. Okay. Can we say it this way? The mom, the storm day. And they try. Oh, yeah. You say, that's, you know, you still say, that was much better, but it was still hard to make it nicer. And you work at it, and you make it nicer. And you just simply model it. And so you say, well, I can't sing like that. Sure you can.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.